In association with Newsarama, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. Merry Christmas, this is John Suntress. It's time for part two of the Rucka debrief, consider that an early Christmas present, as Greg and I discuss more of his current works. Great talk coming up about The Question, not only the co-feature in Detective Comics, but also the Blackest Night Question one-shot that's coming up with Denny O'Neill and Dennis Cowan returning to the series. We also talk about Stumptown, Greg's great Oni Press book with Matthew Southworth. Plus more talk about the Superman books and the upcoming Queen and Country novel. The conversation picks up with part two of the Rucka debrief as we discuss The Question, the co-feature in Detective Comics.
Well, let's not leave out The Question because, man, I finally got to meet Cully face-to-face in Baltimore this fall and tell him how much, I've really enjoyed the story and continue to. It still feels like a Question series, and in every good way. Plus, this is a much different question and an interesting question to follow as much as Charlie ever was.
Oh, thank you. That's good to hear. Well, and actually, the first arc was very much get up and run, if that makes sense. It was
sure.
Get it rolling as sort of fast as possible. And the now in pursuit of it, sort of following after it, it is finally a chance to sort of explore the character a little more. It's one of the reasons why I was really happy to bring Helena in, because I think I discovered when I wrote them opposite each other in Revelations, they have a great chemistry opposite each other, and I like that friendship, and I like how that friendship between them bridges. It bridges the memory of Charlie in a lot of ways. So now that Helena has entered the story, now that Huntress is there, and certainly in let's say 860. 860/861, there is more opportunity for us to look at the characters and to look at how they interact and to see more about them and to see, because it looks like, I think for the most part, that Renee has sort of settled easily into the role, and that's not actually true. So she's still kind of struggling along there. So.
Well, and I guess, how is that going to play out in the coming Blackest Night question issue?
I gotta be real circumspect there.
Okay.
I gotta be real circumspect there, frankly. How to talk about this?
Well, if you can't talk about story, you can talk about process, but, because I am curious about...
Well, Denny and I are working very closely on this. The story is a story that... The story is a story that could not be told without Denny and without Denny's participation. At the same time, like talking about Wonder Woman Blackest Night, it's also a story in service to a larger event.
Okay.
So, but the question isn't part of the larger event, so we are freer to... play with character here. And so for Todd and for Renee, and Todd and Renee do not have a great relationship, and I think that much has been clear, is that they are holding each other at arm's length. And part of the reason behind that is at the heart of 37. And then we added in Lady Shiva because, How could I be given the opportunity to write question number 37 with Denny O'Neill, drawn by Dennis Cowan, and not use Lady Shiva?
Yay.
I mean, it's like, oh, come on. If I could have figured out a way to get Richard Dragon in there and Izzy, I would have. I really would have. I mean, I would have been like, can we send it in HUD?
Awesome.
But, no, so in that aspect, it's tremendously fun and, frankly, daunting. Because Denny... really more than anybody else, in all honesty, is responsible for my career in comics. I was sniffing around the edges of the industry for years and did Whiteout at Oni, which got me in the door,
mm-hmm.
And that was, that was certainly, Joe knows Max doing in no small part, but it was... Patty Jarris putting me in front of Denny O'Neill, and Denny having read my novels at that point, and he and I, we went out to lunch, and he he said, all right, well, let's see if you can write a story. Why don't you write me a 22-page story? And on my flight back to Oregon, I wrote him a 22-page story. And that was it. You know, I mean, he brought me in. He was, as the cops say, he was my rabbi.
Cool.
For many, many, many years. And, you know, with the changeover with Shrek coming in and Denny leaving, that was not a real easy time. It put, I think, a great strain on our relationship, and one that I did not see until far later.
On your relationship with Bob or on your relationship with Denny?
My relationship with Denny.
I understand.
Relationship with Bob's a totally separate thing, and that's a conversation for drinks.
All right, then. but okay, no, I understand what you said.
I mean, Denny, you know, Denny ended up, you know, he fell out of the orbit. He was an NPC.
Right.
So, and our communication was very, very sparse for a long time as a result. So just, you know, the opportunity to tell a story with him, with, you know, the guy who more than anybody else, I think, as a writer in the industry, influenced me. There really aren't words. I don't mean to get mushy on it. You know, I had read great comics, and people can argue quite persuasively that there are even better comics out there than Denny's run on The Question. But from a purely subjective point of view, it was Denny's run on The Question that made me as an adult fall in love with comics, as opposed to the kid who had fallen in love with comics. And I suppose, if one wants to get vaguely philosophical about it, you can look at a lot of people in the industry, and you can sort of track the moment that they decided the comics were the greatest thing ever. And for a lot of us, you know, that was picking up an issue of Superman when we were 8, you know, and watching him, you know, beat the snot out of Metallo, for instance. And for others of us, it was picking up, you know, Neil Gaiman, you know, doing Sandman. And then by the same token, there are moments of reinvention. You know, I was reading Superman and the Incredible Hulk, and then along came Dark Knight, and that was different. And then along came Batman Year One, and that was a sea change. But how to put it, I think that Denny's run on The Question, those 36 issues, are as gently consistent and artistically sound a run in the mainstream ever. I mean, I hold them up as a very lofty ideal. So, and with that in mind, then to be told, okay, and then we're going to do a Question 37. It's like, yeah, you know what? You really can't. He ended it at 36. I mean, he ended it at 36. There is an ending there. And then, you know, you get your Question quarterlies, you get your annuals and so on. Yes,
right,
I know.
Right.
He follows Charlie. But as you go further down the line of the quarterlies, I mean, the last quarterly really has only the barest connection to what the series had been before. But those 36 issues, you know, it was the first time I picked up a comic and been like, oh my God, this isn't plot writing. He's writing about a theme. This is all thematic. You don't name a guy Zaz and not say we're talking about the nature of sanity and the subjective nature of madness.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you don't do that. And lo and behold, that was precisely what he was doing. Yeah. And that took balls. I mean, think about that. That took balls. And it says something about, you know, Archie, who I never got to meet Archie. I never got to work with him. But, oh, my God, you know, as an editor, he must have been something else.
Everyone I speak to, and Walter Simonson being the most recent, you know, example of that in Baltimore, they all say the same thing. And yeah, it just luckily there's such a great body of work that Goodwin was involved with, both as writer or editor, that you can point to and say, yeah, that kind of makes sense. He is worthy of this praise, because look at all the quality that you know, he surrounded himself with. So I totally agree with you about the question. I mean, I think you're right. I felt that same way, and I was a college guy reading the question when it was coming out by O'Neill.
So was I, which I guess says everything that anybody who's listening needs to know about how old we are.
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, I was in college, and I remember walking into the comic book store by my campus and, you know, being told, no, they've canceled it, they're canceling it, and just being crushed. I mean, being like, how, why, but no.
No, and also, I think, as opposed to a Batman at that point with Dark Knight, because it came after Dark Knight, but it was the first, like, B-level character that I saw get that kind of treatment. I mean, Grell did the Long Bow Hunters, but I always felt Green Arrow was, or maybe even a C-level character, really, because I think prior to O'Neill's run, you know, it was a Ditko backup in Blue Beetle.
Yeah, I mean, and nobody knew who this character was.
No.
You know, Denny got a hold of this guy. I think that was part of it, you know, that he was able to take him and run, for lack of a better phrase.
And move the character, too, from that, you know, and I think in a lot of ways, I know that he has said on record that, you know, Ditko probably would hate the things that he did to Charlie.
Yeah, absolutely. You know. And he's also said on record, and I understand this, but I'm not sure I agree with him. I do understand it, but I'm not certain I agree. He's said that, you know, given what he did with Charlie and how he changed him, he feels that maybe he should have just created a whole new character to do that, that it was unfair, perhaps, to change the nature of Charlie as he had been, you know, or Vic Sage as he had been first created. And I can see that, and I absolutely respect Denny's point of view there, but we are an industry that has survived and will continue to survive on the basis of reinvention. And I think it was actually a stroke of genius to take this concept that was a polemic concept. And there aren't many of those Ditko stories. If you actually go looking, I think there's something like six of them tops. I can't remember the exact number, but there really aren't many of them.
Mm-hmm.
And none of them terribly long. And if you read them, you know, they're good. You can see what's cool about the character, but it's, you know, it's an objectivist manifesto.
Yes.
All right. Well, an objectivist manifesto, there is a place for that. But writing a polemic is not a good story. Polemics do not make good story. They never have. Simple as that. They just don't. So, you know, I actually think it really was a stroke of brilliance for Denny to look at this character. And you know, and again, he said on the record, you look at the first issue that he and Dennis did with that gorgeous, gorgeous Sienkiewicz cover.
Mm-hmm.
And he kills him.
Yep.
You know, the character starts off looking an awful lot like Ditko's Vic Sage. And at the end of the issue, you know, this is a guy named Charles Victor Zsasz, who's been wrestling with his own demons and who's lying at the bottom of a river with a bullet in his head, and that brilliant last panel with the mask floating off of his face and his eyes wide open in shock, you know, of like, how did I end up dead? You know,
yeah.
Like, well, you ended up dead by being an idiot, you know, by being a punk, yo. So I understand and I respect absolutely what Denny is saying when he says that, you know, perhaps he should not have done this. That perhaps he should have created all character out of whole cloth. But I'm also not sure I agree. I think that it worked. And I wonder if I have to wonder that if he had gone another way, you know, if he had created something out of whole cloth, what he would have ended up with, or if he would have been able to end up with anything, frankly. So, But this is wool gathering now. I'm just rambling.
No worries. So, well, no, and I'm curious about your thoughts about Denny's character and the way he's written Charles and Vic, and now has he, you know, to get ready for this issue? Did he read 52, or was he? Did you brief him out?
Yeah,
obviously,
he was. He was given the, I believe Seguin sent him all the co-feature stuff, and sort of, you know, loaded him up, so he was aware. You know, we've talked about it, and he didn't. We did an interview with Vanita.
Yes.
You know, from Newsarama, and one of the things that, you know, Denny said, and it was funny because when she asked the question, I started laughing, you know, which is, what do you think of what Craig's done? It's like, what's he going to say? You know? I mean, even if he hates it, you know, I know Denny is, he's Denny. You know, he's not going to say, oh, I hate it. He's going to be a professional and a gentleman. So, you know, I couldn't stop laughing when she asked the question. You know, he has said to me, and he needn't have said this. If he felt otherwise, he could have said so.
Sure.
He said that it works for him. It makes sense.
Okay.
He thinks it is a logical extension. And, you know, that's frankly very heartening to hear. Because I would have been pretty miserable if he said he didn't like it.
Well, sure. Well, but also, you know, Denny hasn't walked that far away from the character. Just a couple of years ago, we had the paperback Helltown.
Yeah,
which was great. Man, yeah, I loved it. You know, and there, you know, and I know
I
you.
I love his prose. I think he's actually very, very good in prose.
I agree.
I would kind of like him to write more.
No, I've read a few short stories here and there, and that novel, for example. And no, I completely agree. And it was a pleasure to reread Vic and Charlie. You know, Charlie's story, though, from this standpoint, and a much more fleshed out version of the story. And it really isn't. It's an adaptation, I suppose, of sorts, but it really is its own interesting novel and well worth anyone who misses that.
And it's a revision. I mean, I think one of the things that made Helltown work so well is that he's able to revisit a story that he told in a different medium and take advantage of the new medium and tell it with perhaps the best way to put it is the benefit of that distance.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. Okay. Well, I look forward to the collaboration and these two characters. You know, and I understand that, again, you know, there's the nerd part. It's not really the character. It's a construct that thinks it's the character or, you know, takes those personality traits of the character. But it will be an interesting conversation. And that is the one thing about Blackest Night. It is all of these regretful moments that the heroes have to face.
Well, I mean, I honestly think that that's part of the genius of what Jeff did is that he created a construct that demanded an emotional content to the stories. You know, the Black Lanterns are there to feed emotions. They want strong emotion. So if you're going to tell a story in this, you know, in this confine, you know, properly, you've got to use that.
Absolutely.
I think that was very, very smart. And, you know, I mean, it is, because the story, it's not Charlie's story. Charlie's dead. You know, the story,
right.
Charlie's story is over. This is more than anybody else, I think this is Todd's story.
Interesting.
And in many ways, you know, I had always read Todd as Denny.
Very interesting.
I don't want to give anything away. I will say that when all is said and done, there will be, you know, somewhere out there, there's going to be a liberal arts major who's going to have a very interesting meta read on this. They're going to read it and they're going to like, this is very interesting that Denny wrote this. And so, you know, and for the most part, I haven't been using a lot of first person narrative lately. And one of the first things that Denny wanted to do was, you know, I want a first person narrative here. I want Todd's POV. And I was like, okay. Done. Let's do it. So.
Cool, man. Well, and again, that dovetails into what Denny was doing back when he was writing The Question and the recommended reading that we had at the end of every letter column.
Yeah, well, you know? And it's funny. We've been talking about whether or not there's a way to get in a page for, you know, recommended reading.
Well, that'd be great.
I don't know. You know, I mean, page count right now, it's such a premium. There's a big piece of me that's like, well, we're not going to be able to do it. So, you know, maybe instead what we'll end up having to do is
do a blog.
I'll post on the I'll post on the blog exactly and say recommended reading for this issue. But it's funny too, you know, right after the announcement, that was one of the first questions I was asked. Will there be recommended reading?
Outstanding. See?
It's like, okay. I'm there.
See, it's not just you and me, Greg. A lot of people miss that.
Isn't.
There you go. Very good, man.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. There is a small but very present fan base for that original material. There are people who, to this day, respond to it, I think, very much the way I did, frankly.
And to be honest, I think a lot of, you know, writers of current crime comics and a lot of repeat guests on Word Balloon, for lack of any other way to categorize it. But honestly, guys like you that I do have multiple conversations with, when we all talk about our go-to books and everything, you guys...
We always go back to that one.
Absolutely, man. The question's on everybody's list, from Bendis to Brubaker to Fraction, you know, off the top of my head right there. So.
Yeah, well, and see, I think that, to me, just... And now that we've bored everybody into, you know, deleting the podcast file. But this is the last thing I'll say on it, which is, to me, I think that says more than anything else. You look at the quality of writers who turn around and cite this work, and when writers talk about the stuff that they love and they keep talking about it, to me, that's when I know it's like, yeah, okay. There's merit to be found there.
Definitely. Well, and it's one of those books that I keep saying every decade, literally going back to the 40s, there have always been quality comics, and I really do believe that, even going back to the beginning. But there have just been more great comics now, I think, at the same time than there had, you know, for adults, I would say, than there had been in previous decades. And that's just a personal opinion.
We are living in a lovely era of riches, right?
Yep. Well, and moving on to, and let's keep it in the crime and detective vein, before I get to Superman and finish our mainstream wheelhouse, I want to bring up Stumped Out because, great first issue, and you and Matt Selworth.
Thank you.
Delivering exactly what I think we were all expecting. And
yeah, the issue benefits from being exactly what we said it was going to be. So.
No, but also reinforced with... beautiful black and white drawings that you guys showed me back in San Diego 2 years ago, and
yeah.
Now that it's finally out, you know, honestly, all it's missing is, you know, William Conrad doing a Quinn Martin production or whatever, Stumptown, with Marianne Mobley as Dex. And...
Oh, man, that would be brilliant.
And you need you need a mic post harmonica for a couple, like,
yeah,
end scene moments.
That was the thing you need. You need that blues guitar. You have no idea how many times I've listened to the Rockford Files theme while working on that book. So
that's hilarious, man.
Yeah.
Hey, because I'm really curious, because you've made it pretty obvious in every interview you've done talking about Stumptown and leading up to Stumptown, 70s and 80s detective shows. I know Simon and Simon is up there for you, and certainly.
Well. Simon & Simon is up there in memory.
Okay, there you go. I understand. Guilty pleasure.
Let us say, having watched them again recently, it doesn't hold up. it really does. And it's, you know, the irony is, like, how to put this. I watched, you know, you get the Rockford box set, and that first season of Rockford, you know, bears almost no resemblance to what the show actually becomes ultimately. Especially those first half dozen episodes are real. You know, they're not Rockford. They're PI tropes.
Yeah, boilerplate PI. Absolutely.
Yeah. But even from that first episode, you can tell there's something different going on here. There's a different energy to it, for lack of a better phrase.
Okay.
And you pick it up, and it does carry you along, and. You watch that pilot episode of Simon and Simon, and not so much. just not so much.
I told you about that Stephen Cannell, you know, video interview that he does that literally goes on for 4+ hours for the Television Academy?
Yeah.
Okay, because honestly, to appreciate the beats that you're hitting in Stumptown, and that, you know, really, I think Cannell really honed into a fine art, starting before the Rockford Files with like shows like Adam 12 and Toma and other shows like that. He really goes through the writing process and also how he, you know, approached writing weekly detective procedurals, making each moment count with a supporting character that might only have one scene to deliver one piece of information, but providing a backstory and stuff like that. I see that in Stumptown.
Yeah. I mean, I make no bones about it. I was very actively looking at structure and, you know, and the concept there and going, okay, well, what are the tropes? You know, what are the tropes we're going to need? And actually, one of the tropes you haven't seen yet, which you will be seeing in issue two, which is you have not met the tame cop. But there has to be a tame cop. You know, there has to be the cop who's the friend.
Dennis, yes.
Yeah, it has to be Dennis. There has to be Dennis. That's exactly it. That is absolutely 100. You know your reference. There has to be Dennis.
Absolutely, man.
You know, and frankly, you could break it down even further. You know, for Ansel, read Rocky. You know, and go from there.
Sure,
there is no Angel analog.
Okay.
But that may be coming.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm still working on it. You know, the first arc is completed, putting together the second, and wanting to write actual mysteries requires a lot more prep, oddly. So that is a slower process.
So how many issues for the first story arc?
Four. All the arcs are going to be four issues.
Okay.
That was our agreement.
Is Matthew doing, or is it a letterer that's doing some of the window dressing that we're seeing as far as fonts that are being used to give the title page and stuff? It felt like a 70s detective show.
I think, honestly, it's been Keith and Matthew working very closely together.
Very cool.
Well, but, yeah, I mean, Matthew's been very active in all the design. And then, you know, when Keith got involved, and Keith came in relatively late in the process, they've been going back and forth, you know, on the covers and so on. And Matthew has a very... I don't want to say cute, but he's got a very sharp color sense, you know. And this was even before Lee was coloring. He knew, you know, he knew what he wanted. For instance, he knew right from the start, and I still don't understand this, that the Mustang was, quote, canary yellow. I have no idea why he decided it was canary yellow. He said, I want the Mustang to be canary yellow. I was like, okay. I mean, really, that is a... next to no interest to me. Sure, if you want a canary yellow Mustang, fine by me. That will make you, I see no reason why. It, you know, as long as it's not hot pink. That's been the one thing I've been down on. Don't wear pink. Can't be pink. Otherwise, we're good. Again, you know, really collaborative. Wonderfully so.
And it feels, I mean, honestly, I think canary yellow, yeah, that kind of is kind of a what feels like a 70s show. I mean, this is a modern story. But it does kind of have that very specific image that you can't help but think of, you know, the stuff that it's that inspired it. Is he coloring it?
No, that's Lee Lowridge.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Both his designs and I think Lee's colors, I mean, it's just eye-popping.
They're complementing beautifully.
Absolutely, yeah. Man. Because, yeah, again, going back to those original drawings that you guys showed me, those were all black and white. And then I'm like, well, this looks fine, having no idea of what Lee was about to do. And it's like, well, that's even better.
Well, it's also interesting to me, too, because I think that there was, especially based on the black and white that we released, there was an expectation that this was going to be very noir. And, you know, we had talked about it last time we talked about it. I was like, it's not noir. It isn't noir. I'm not, you know, as far as I'm concerned, noir is very well covered right now. I think between Ed and frankly, Jason Aaron,
I would agree.
We're in happy noir land.
Absolutely.
I was not interested in doing noir. I was interested in doing a PI story. And there is to me a definite, you know, they can overlap, but I wanted a very different feel to this. It's interesting too, watching people sort of figure out Dex, and I think, you know, I love the expectation that she's queer. Based off of one issue. Well, no, I mean, to me, that's more a referendum on me as a writer and what people expect of me now than anything else. You know, that there is an expectation. Okay, she's gay. It's like, but well, okay, well, all right, if that's the way you're going to be. She's not, but all right.
That's hilarious.
It will become clearer later. lot, you know, you're one issue in. You don't know her yet. One of the things you will learn is that she doesn't know herself very well in a lot of areas. In other areas, she knows herself quite well. So.
Much like Tara Chase, she is kind of head above water, but for different reasons.
Tara suffers from acute self-loathing, and Dex doesn't. You know, Dex doesn't dislike herself or her life. There are things she would like, you know, better. More money would be good.
Sure.
You know, she wants to take care of her brother, and she wants to do that, you know, honorably and appropriately. But, yeah, the differences between her and Tara, you know, Tara's far more dangerous than Dex. And the fact of the matter is, I think Tara is far less likable than Dex. If we like Tara, I think we sort of pity her.
Sure.
And I think we also... Tara's ability to take care of herself in just about any given situation, you know, is a hallmark of that character. And Dex is, you know, Dex is always going to get punched. You know, I mean, it's just, you're just getting the taste of it in that first issue. But she's always going to get, in the same way that Jim always would end up being belted. And every now and then, you know, she'll land a punch of her own. But for the most part, no, she suffers from the standard PI problem of not knowing when to keep her damn mouth shut, which is, you know, I take directly from Chandler, and which I thought Garner and the Rockford Files, you know, raised to an art form.
Yep.
And also that, you know, Dex is possessed of that, what Chandler described as that peculiar sense of honor. You know, she has her own honor. And at the end of the day, that honor will be what will both get her in trouble and will be what gets her out of it. You know, she's gonna, my brother has described her as a cat. You know, she's always gonna land on her feet, but she may fall real far first.
So. Well, I have a feeling at the end of the first story, I should have you and Matt back together.
That would be fun.
Honestly, yeah, because, I mean, it was I got to meet Matt last year at WonderCon. Good start, and when does issue 2 come out?
Issue 2 should be out, I think, in the next 2 weeks.
Oh, great.
We're doing a reprint of issue 1 as well, because we sold through on it. So.
Hey, that's great, man. Oh, fantastic.
I don't know what the final disposition of that was. I think at one point, James Lucas was talking about trying to print issue 1 with issue 2. But I think there was a discussion as to whether or not we wanted to set that precedent, you know, which was we'll reprint issue 2 as or issue 1 as part of issue 2. Therefore, you need not buy issue 1s, you know, so.
Yeah, no, I understand. Chicago benefits from having a lot of cool comic book stores. Find issue 1 or this new printing of second printing of issue 1 and definitely look forward to issue 2. Good stuff, man.
The response has been wonderful so far. I think both Matthew and I were delighted. I don't think either of us knew what to expect. So,
do you have room for a letter page or anything like that, or is there time to put something in there like that? Okay.
We do, and I see no reason not to. So, I think the goal is going to be to do some quote unquote value added content, shall we say?
Will we see any essays about TV detectives or anything like that?
I don't know. Again, I mean, I really like what Ed's done with Criminal.
Yeah,
but I'm not sure. I'm not sure I want to copy him that, obviously.
Well, I understand, but it is a different genre. It's funny because Chuck Dixon's first couple issues of Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, I felt in the same way explored the spaghetti western the way Ed's been doing with noir fiction, and I kind of like that. I kind of like that evolution, or even it's really not an evolution. Good text pieces in comics are nothing new.
Yeah, it certainly broadens the content. And frankly, I think that, you know, anything that adds to content is good. Though I will say we are, you know, I mean, you're getting a lot of book for what we're charging. We are getting a color book, and you get, you know, our pages, you know, we've got, I think one of the issues came out to like 36.
Oh, wow.
You know, so we have not been, say, religiously going, you only get 24 here. It's you get however many pages you get for. Or you get however many pages are needed for that particular installment.
Sure. Yeah, and that's got to be freeing a little bit, obviously, when you do your own thing to kind of, no, it's this many pages, that's it.
Yeah, it I thought so. It's also really, I think it's very good for Matthew, because he's able to, okay, I got this page and you're asking for way too much, or we have this much room, I can let this breathe here, and, you know, I'm going to take this sequence and turn it into a two-page sequence. That opening shooting sequence, you know, that double page with
yes.
the bird flying off of the St. John's Bridge, that was all Matthew. You know, that was him taking what I had scripted and going, I want to expand this moment. And I was like, fine, do it. And I think, you know, the result is self-evident. It really worked beautifully. So,
is Matthew a Portland guy as well?
No, he's actually in Seattle.
Okay.
But that actually has worked out pretty well. So, and we've had good opportunities, you know, for me to give him reference. And again, there's a very, very free exchange of information and ideas.
Cool. Well, let's wrap up with some Superman talk.
Okay.
Because, man, interesting moments for both Action and World of New Krypton. Because, yeah, I love, and it's something that, like an idiot, of course, and not knowing where the story was going, I'm like, yeah, where's Jack Sir? Isn't he around? Oops. Well, there we go.
Yeah. Well, you know, the big thrill for me right now is that I'm working with Troutman again. And I love writing with him. I think he raises my game. I just don't. And he's very good at answering a weakness I have, in my opinion, which is I tend to go a little small. I tend to condense my world, for lack of a better phrase, right? And I've had more than one editor remind me, look, your budget is unlimited. You know, you don't have to blow up the car. You can blow up the city block. But it's Eric who consistently reminds me, you are in a much larger world, and there is more that we can do with it. And so that sort of falls in now, and what you'll see in, I want to say 86, is we're finally going to give a nice, clear, clean sort of telling of the Flamebird Knight myth, of the core myth.
Okay.
And there is another player involved, as frankly there must be if you think about it. And once that manifests, and then we tie that in with the stuff with Jax, or I think a lot of stuff's going to become clear. So,
cool.
I'm very excited. We're going to go. We've got the story arc that sort of runs through 889. I think is going to be it's number one. It's a big story, but I also think it's actually going to be very. I think it's going to be a very rewarding story, for I suppose lack of a better phrase. I think I'm hoping people will like it.
I think all these additions to the, you know, Superman family. I don't know who will survive whatever pending wars are coming. And, I mean, you know, we've seen hints of that in...
What war?
Well,
whatever are you talking about, John?
And certainly readers of Superman's Secret Origins have seen mention of it by the Legion, so...
I know not what you mean.
Exactly. But, yeah, it'll be fun to see who's still around when the smoke clears, because outside of the confines of the Daily Planet and the Kents, we haven't seen that many other Superman supporting characters, you know, matter and stick around. And, you know, with the occasional Cat Grants and Ron Troops and Steve Lombards and things like that, it's, I think, what all of you are doing now and adding all these other people, including not only what's happening in Action, but in World of New Krypton. I mean, I know James has talked a lot about using, you know, Gen of Saturn and now even, the most recent issue with you guys, always happy to see Adam Strange. But,
and again, that's James. James was like, Adam Strange. We need Adam Strange. Like, excellent. All right, let's do it. Like I said, I tend to condense the world, and it'll be guys like James or Sterling, you know, who'll say, no, we can use this, and I'll go, oh, right, that is there, isn't it? And this has always, in my opinion, been my problem writing in the Superman universe specifically, which is, you know, I like the street view, and I'm comfortable, you know, low to the ground, I suppose, and the nature of Superman is to fly. So I am constantly, you know, having to check myself and trying to rise to support that, for lack of a better phrase, I guess.
Well, the mystery that's happening right now in World of New Krypton, and in fact, even the hunt for the sleeper Kryptonians in action and stuff, I mean, that's the thing. You've got a lot of neat mysteries going on that go beyond the usual superhero versus supervillain kind of stories, and each one has its own different shade, from really everything that's going on in Detective to the Superman books to Stumptown. So it's fun to see you play in these different ways. And also, now tell me, because the very dialogue that's in New Krypton 10 between Adam Strange and Superman, I think are reminding each character reminding the other of, no, this is why I need you to help me in this case. And that's great. I mean, because it really does. It's you always say it's a street level version of Superman, but I hear, at least I read your voice of Superman too, of, hey, you know, I'm not Bruce, I'm not Ralph, I'm not a detective.
I love Superman. I love all the things he can be. But I'm not really a fan of any one character being all things at all times, if that makes sense.
Sure.
For James and I, New Krypton has always been about, why is he super? You know, what makes him super? When you put him in this environment and they're all like him, they can all do what he can do, why is he different? Why is he special? Because he is. He must be. If he is not, then we are wasting our time in these stories. He's not just super because bullets will bounce off him. So the opportunity to put him in this environment where his powers really are irrelevant and it is the strength of his character that becomes important, that I think has been the greatest thing to come out of this year. Just speaking simply, you know, from a writing standpoint, if nothing else.
Well, and I think from a reader standpoint, too, because now we're also seeing him rely not only on his character, well, I guess using his character in these political situations. And, I mean, and again, we're reminded of that in issue 10 when he goes to, you know, solve this mystery that you know, obviously has some sort of tie to the labor class, finds a tragedy within the labor class as well that he has to immediately help with. But by the same, you know, at the same time, suddenly sees who he sees as a suspect getting away and is conflicted on, I want to help this person, but then I got to stop the suspect from going away. You get this great little Greek chorus moment of the people saying, ah, you see, you don't care about us. You just want to get your guy. And him, you know, you write Superman failing in a good way. And I don't mean failing in the big sense, but yeah, just.
No, I know what you mean. And yeah. I think that to me I appreciate you saying it. Because it's a huge challenge, because he is super. He can do so much. No, I mean, he can do so much. And
yes.
Frankly, speaking from a dramatic point of view, I mean, just as a writer, you know, the you want to, you know, he's Superman, but he also needs to be somewhat, you know, he's got to be somewhat fallible.
Sure.
Or else there's no drama to be found. Or so I would argue. I'm sure people would disagree with me loudly and violently on that particular point. But
that is what makes him more interesting than just smashing through the wall, bending the guns, and
yeah,
you know, flying off with the crooks
absolutely.
To the police department. No, I agree.
Yeah. I mean, to me, absolutely. But then again, like I said, I may be in a minority. I never know. You know.
No, it's a good mystery in space, and we need Adam Strange there, obviously. And honestly, that's one of my favorite moments, when they're in the crime scene, and it's like, okay, Adam, tell me what you see. And Adam reminding Superman, no, you're the one with microscopic vision. Tell me what you see.
How about you start?
And as you say now, you've got Eric coming in helping you with action, and you and Sterling working together as well in action and Supergirl. And also, I was wondering, the difference between bringing Denny kind of up to speed for the Question story as opposed to, you know, you coming in to this Superman story and James having to initially bring you up to speed and stuff.
Yeah, it's a strange place to sort of sit, actually, because you want to make sure that you are conveying the narrative requirements clearly and then also, you know, conveying them in the larger context. Like, you cannot work in comics unless you are a writer artist, you cannot work in comics if you cannot collaborate, and unless you can collaborate, frankly, well. You know, I can't draw. The nature of what I do has to be collaborative, because otherwise it just simply will not exist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if Southworth and I aren't communicating, if JH and I aren't communicating, then the work is going to suffer. I have been really fortunate in the last, frankly, 2 years that I have been, I've been rolling really well when it comes up to who I'm collaborating with. And it's really, it's delightful. It's also kind of bizarre. Eventually the string's going to have to end. You know, this streak will end at some point. I'm going to ride it out for as long as I can. I am as proud of the material that is coming out. I mean, simply in the last 4 weeks, from Stumptown, to Detective, to Black Knight, Wonder Woman, I am as proud of this stuff as I've been of anything that I've done.
Excellent, man.
I think that it is good, solid work. And at the end of the day, that's what I want to be able to do.
Well, and it sounds like you're more comfortable.
Yeah, I am. There have been times when we have talked, and it has not been the best of times. but right now, things really are they're going swimmingly. So we will see. Like I said, we'll see how much longer this lasts.
No.
Yeah, knock on wood. Now,
am I missing anything? Is anything else on the horizon other than?
Well,
I mean,
this stuff, but I can't
talk about it. Oh, there you go. Well,
there may be actually a very big announcement made in January that
cool.
I'm really, really excited about, and that we hopefully we'll get to talk about next time.
Excellent.
And then, I'm putting the last touches on the new novel. It's called The Last Run. It's a Q&C.
Yes, indeed.
Novel. And I will get you an ARC when I have them, so you can take a gander in advance. And then you can wave it in front of Neesman, and taunt him.
I definitely will.
Good.
Absolutely.
And we will laugh.
Exactly. God, it's so seriously, man, you've like, I think between, Flanagan and Neesman and me, you've got... You got three of the podcasters always waiting for your next move. So,
thank God.
Yeah. Well, please.
In a good way.
No. Exactly. Well,
as opposed to the oh God, not another from Rucka.
No. So. Well, then that's why I didn't want to even. I never want to push you with Q&C stuff, because I know that you will serve your wine when it's time.
Yeah, I will say that this is the first novel I think I've ever written that my editor has really come back with no notes on at all. I mean, she's got a line edit, and the copy editor has copy edit queries. But other than that, this one went in and it came back, as opposed to me getting a call from my editor going, okay, I think I know what you're going for, but it didn't quite work here. This was just like, nope, good, run with it. So, as a result, ironically, I'm actually very suspicious of this novel right now. That's silly. I'm actually going like, okay, what I miss? This sense of like, wait a minute, you playing a trick on me? What's going on?
Well, does Jen read your stuff before or as?
Yeah,
it's...
she does actually. And when I was first starting out, what we would do would be, I would write my pages and then I would read them to her, because I find that I have to, reading them aloud I don't want to say brings it alive, it clarifies it in a different way. And there had been actually a period where, just timing wise, it became very difficult for either of us to do it. We just didn't have the time. And with this one, she was actually very insistent that we make the time. And I think that certainly helps it. My process when I'm working on the novel, or a novel, is to go in and, I'll do however many words a day or whatnot. And then on the next day, I will go over the printout, because I always do a print, and we'll try to proof it and make revision. And then I'll incorporate those into my master document, and then I will, you know, and then I will move forward from there. And the process of actually needing to read it to somebody makes that revision much more dynamic, for lack of a better phrase, because it sort of inherently, you know, it inherently creates interaction. If something doesn't work, I have somebody sitting there saying, "Well, that didn't work. That doesn't sound right." And I do think that helps. I think that provides an immediate benefit to the process.
Very cool. Well,
I'm rambling.
It's all things people are interested in, and process becomes a big part of our conversations, and I think it's one that people look forward to hearing. So I'm glad you go into the detail you do. You know that. So
I also know we're coming up on 2 hours of my yammering.
We'll wrap, because honestly, more from the point that it's a Sunday afternoon, and I'm sure, you know, dinner or family commitments are waiting for you.
Yeah, we're making chili because it's freaking freezing in Portland. So we've decided that's chilly weather.
So more Stumptown, Blackest Night, Wonder Woman, Detective. World of New Krypton in action coming up, plus the issue of the question that we'll be waiting for, and eventually the long run, the last run, excuse me.
Yeah, and eventually the last run, yep.
Very cool, man. And as always, thanks for hanging out and talking. And
it is always great to talk to you, John. I mean, it always is.
And I always get good feedback, so I know the listeners are happy with our little chat here, so thank you.
Groovy.
That's Greg Rucka, and that concludes this edition of the Rucka Debrief. We hope you enjoyed it and continue to enjoy Greg's work in Detective Comics, Stumptown, the Superman books, and pretty soon the new Kreena Country novel. That'll do it for this edition. Thanks again for listening. John Suntress reminding you to keep tuned to Word Balloon. Next week is the Skip Week in comics. No new comic books. Skip Week my ass. We are going to have Word Balloon content for you all weekend long. We will take a break for certainly Christmas. But Saturday is Boxing Day, so be looking for a special boxing episode of Word Balloon. And then next week, I hope to have several interviews for you, a couple things in the can, but also new conversations that I'm going to have this week. And I'm going to do my damnedest to get those out for you through New Year's weekend, because I think it would be nice that during the skip week, there's something to look forward to comic book-wise on the week that everyone seems to take off, that final week of 2009. So until next time, thanks for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2009.